Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we are live. Welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. Your boy's back in the saddle again here, like Aerosmith would say, having some fun. Russell is on his way, stuck in LA traffic, so he's only got another 17 hours to go before he gets here. Joe, good to see you. Today we are talking about depth scoring, stats versus tape, what our eyes are seeing us. Hey, is Kempe using this advanced data to help his game? Early analysis of PLD, and much more. Get in the chat, like, and subscribe. Ha, let's go. Man, it's been a while, guys. It's been a while. Back in the saddle, ready to get going. I'm excited. We had some really early excitement here. CJ coming in at 3:40. So for your time, the three amigos are back. We will be shortly once Russell gets in here. He should be coming in here pretty soon. He repeated himself. He's just so excited. Now he's adding some hockey sticks in there. Al Smith, let's go. And then we gave him some time. He's like, good, I'm still working. I could use the extra 30 minutes. You're welcome, Al Smith. Appreciate it. Dave-O, go Kings, go Topanga. Let's go, evening all. Who's the new guy? I don't know. I don't know who I am. I don't even watch hockey anymore, apparently. But appreciate you guys welcoming me back. Thank you, David. Oh, welcome back. Appreciate it. CJ, thank you. Hope your trip was fantastic. Yes, it was. Joe and I were talking about it. It was 3 weeks well spent. Not really able to watch any hockey at all because it's 6 hours to 8 hours, depending on where I was at ahead of time. So 1 or 2 in the morning, and you need VPNs and all this kind of stuff like that. And it was just wasn't working. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get all the data on the podcast, just like you fans listening to Hockey Royalty podcast, see what was going on. You guys did a great job in my absence. Appreciate you guys holding it down. Joe, how have you been, man? It's been almost a month. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. First of all, welcome back. And thank you. Appreciate it. The, Russell, we did our best, but I made comments pretty much on each of them, but certainly the last one, like, I can't wait for Rando to get back here because Russell had said it, I think at one point, it's just like you kind of get the ship where it needs to be because there's times where we'll just be flying aimlessly through space, talking about Lord knows what we end up talking about sometimes, but you keep us on track. So we're definitely happy to have you back in the saddle there.
No, I appreciate that. Appreciate that. It was a good trip. Thoroughly enjoyed myself. I would highly recommend Portugal and Spain to anybody. Portugal, I liked a little bit more laid back. It was nice having more people speak English, which was kind of great. I'm a social, if people can't tell. So I like going out and talking and doing those types of things. I appreciate all the well wishes. I know with everything breaking down in, Jerusalem and everything like that, people wishing me safe travels home and getting home safe. It means a lot that you guys were keeping tabs on me and with the well wishes. King's Rule coming in here. Hey guys, thanks for the podcast. Good to see you back. Safe and sound, Rando. Appreciate it, King's Rule. Appreciate it. So let's get into it. I saw like a game and a half because when I got back, it was Saturday night and the jet lag was grabbing a hold of me. And apparently I didn't miss much in the first game on against Boston. But second game, got to see a dub against the Yotes. But we're going to kind of be talking about this month as a whole a little bit. I know recency bias kind of plays into it and how people view the team and everything. But we want to see this kind of month and where the stats are going in and that kind of thing. And the big, not only in the last game, but in the whole month, we've been talking about depth scoring here. So it's been huge. And with the signing of PLD, people are talking about, pushing down the lines and getting more waves going through and not really relying on two lines to pull this whole carriage through. So, Joe, why don't we talk about the bottom line first, and Lazat and how you've seen maybe Grundstrom obviously has multiple goals already, I believe three, excellent shot still there, Lazat still pushing it, and maybe how that kind of line has kind of been molded through the first month of the season.
Well, I think that we've seen Blake Lazat in the past, over the last couple of seasons, be an excellent fourth line center, like one of the best fourth line centers, I think it could be argued, in the NHL. So if you put the right type of wingers around him, then there's an opportunity for that line to be really good and present a mismatch deep into the lineup. And, we've seen him have success with Arthur Kaliev in the past. Brendan Lemieux was somebody that had success on his line, and Carl Grundstrom too. And Grundstrom's off to a really good start. He's got three goals on the season. Two of them are 5-on-5 goals. So, yeah, I think that they're getting scoring. Trevor Lewis scored in the last game. He's picked up a goal and I think an assist so far. So I think it's not surprising to see the production because, well, that's what Lazat can do. He can drive a line at that part of the lineup. We've talked about it. Randon, I know you're a huge Tonka guy, and we've talked about how productive he was when we've all tried to find times it's like, is Tonka, is can he stick in the lineup? But then you look at the numbers, just like, how do you not have him in the lineup? All he does is produce, and he's doing that right now. So, I think it's great to see production up and down the lineup. I know, everybody talked about the spine of the team and with after the Dubois signing, and it's like Kopitar, Dubois, Deneau, and everybody stopped there. But it's like, do not forget about Blake Lazat. Just because he's not a big guy or he's not a big name guy, and he is a fourth line center, like it's not as if he's a top six guy or anything, but this is what he does. He contributes to the offense. He's a really, really good play driver. And I think with the right wingers, you can have a productive fourth line.
Yeah. 2/3 of that line are top five in the team in goals this month. So, being Grundstrom and Lazat. So I personally think, I know you mentioned it, in the podcast before I left, that you believe Jad is like a Swiss Army knife, that he could play up and down the lineup. And I believe the same thing with Grundstrom. I think he adds an element of he's going to be there to shoot. He's going to be there around the net. He's going to muck it up. He's not afraid to lay some wood down and hit some people. And his wrist is just very underrated. And I think he kind of goes along those lines of like, okay, everybody wants to take him out for young blood, but then – why? Like he's producing at this point. And I know last season he was pretty inconsistent, but it always seemed like the game that he got put back in the lineup, he would score. Like it would always be that way. And then two playoffs ago, he was one of our best players, if not the best player in the lineup for a stretch of game. So I think it's just necessary. And a lot of Kings Twitter and fandom wants a little bit more hitting on it, and they wants a little bit more size with the Unglin bringing in. They like that. They like the Gavrikov, but Grundstrom brings that. He's not afraid to shoot. He's not afraid to lay it down. And I think the energy to where that line is not only able to score, but it's relentless to play against, right? Like it's never ending because you're either getting pestered on the defensive side, on the defensive side, or they're able to create some buzz on the offensive side. So I think they have a nice little dynamic. I would like to see a little bit more circulation into that Trevor Lewis spot, just to kind of keep some people fresh with the and maybe some, play a Jared Anderson Dolan or something like that. I know that the cap constraints and everything, you kind of got to force somebody into the lineup. It's not like Lewis is playing out of his mind, but I really like that fourth line in the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I echo pretty much everything you just said. I just sense that I'm kind of the down man when it comes to Lewis, but so far I wouldn't say he's been good, but the Kings have the line has produced in spite of it, and he's chipped in too. So the line's producing right now, so I'm sure we're not going to see any changes coming off a game where they chip in some points on top of it. So
depth doesn't always come just from the fourth line. I know that the middle six has kind of been interchangeable. So I'm going to kind of take this in a little bit of different direction with one of your favorite players and a fan favorite is Trevor Moore, obviously leading the team in goals. And he's kind of been more of a depth piece. I think with his struggle last season and me, I'll fully admit, thought that he was overpaid, not only in term, but in money. And so far he's making me eat crow, and rightly so. It is a long season and hopefully he can keep that up, but it's bringing in Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kempe getting 40 goals and Kopitar having another good season and hoping we wanted to see a big jump from Byfield. Trevor Moore's name's kind of been was pushed aside to start the season. I know you did almost a full podcast on Trevor Moore a couple weeks ago. So, he's definitely getting noticed now, but that's part of this topic is depth scoring. I think to start the season, if you were to say that Trevor Moore was going to lead the team in goals, I probably would have laughed in your face. And he's done just that. So, I mean, I think he's brought a great depth to the scoring acumen for this team.
So one of the things, I mean, he was my bold prediction. I don't think you were around on it because you may have been gone.
I listened to that episode. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. 30 goals, which is admittedly bold, but the point of the question that Russell put out there was bold. So I went bold. Mm-hmm. But you're right, because everything you just said with what you have, Anže Kopitar at the top, he's your 1C, Kempe's your 40 goal scorer. You bring in Dubois, Fiala's a point of game player. Then there's the young guys everybody talks about with Quentin Byfield, Arthur Kaliev, then Laferriere comes seemingly out of nowhere and he's got a spot on the roster, rightfully so. And I think you're right. I think Trevor Moore kind of found his way off to the side a little bit, but there was just too much that I've liked about his game the last couple of years that if he can be healthy, I really think this is a player that, again, 30 may be bold, but I think 20 is a lock. Like, I genuinely think that he was easily to a 20-goal scorer this year, health, provided health. But if he popped off, that this is somebody that could push 30, and I think we're off to a good start here. The motor he brings, he's relentless on the puck. He draws penalties. And the thing is I believe it was Jim Fox that noted it on one of the broadcasts earlier in the season. It was one of the first couple of games, I think, talked about a tweak in his stick and his stick blade, which I wasn't aware of before the bold prediction. But if he did make a tweak to his stick and to his blade, that could inevitably help his shot in addition to any work he's put in the off season on his shot. So yeah, like this is somebody that if he can start to chip in, now you're talking about, you've got Trevor Moore scoring 20 plus goals. You've got Grundstrom's going to chip in, 15 goals. And then you've got Blake Lizotte doing what he's doing on the fourth line. Takes a little bit of pressure off of the guys at the top where, Kempe hasn't really gotten going. That top line hasn't gotten going yet in terms of production. So it takes a little bit of pressure off that when if one line doesn't have it, you've got a few others that can contribute. And I think that is just so, so important.
I think that's a big reason why they're averaging over four goals a game. Yeah. I mean, and where most of our games are going to be track meets, where it's going to be interesting because it's like you said, when one line doesn't have it, you're like, okay, there's goal scorers on every single line. One of these lines are going to punch through and have a day. And be able, I mean, there's been one game this season where the offense has kind of looked lacklustered, right? I mean, so to my knowledge, I mean, like you watched the whole season, yeah, kind of just getting snippets, but to me, it's been like one that the offense has really looked, anemic. And it's like, okay, that's the type of team that you're never out of it. You're never out of a game with the way the lineup is constructed right now.
Yeah. And I don't know that coaches, particularly maybe McClellan, wants to win games 7-4 night in and night out. But this is the team that they're kind of slowly, it's really weird. They've got a team that's built for a track meet. Maybe not a track meet, but they got a team that's built for offense in terms of the forwards, but they got a group of defensemen that is built to defend first and foremost before anything. And then they've got goaltending, which is like, just find a way to make one extra save than the other guy. So it's a little awkward if you think about it, but no, like they're it's the depth of the scoring is what makes this team as strong as it is.
I saw a comment on here and let's see where if I can find it again. And, oh, here we go. Dave O coming in here. All the scoring and Kempe still hasn't got going yet. You know, the first line has been kind of, you know, a little bit lackluster so far as a unit, as far as putting pucks in the net, and 5-on-5, you know, the analytics, might say something different there, but it's really nice to see a full lineup contributing to the scoring. So for a long period of time, it was, if Kopitar's line isn't moving, this team isn't moving. And then we got Carter and, you know, that line contributed, you know, with that 70s line. It's like, oh, now we got two lines. And then that was really it. And the team for the last 2 years, it was like, okay, either the Deneau line or the Kopitar line's got to figure out something. Otherwise, this team isn't really going to put anything together. And now to have four lines really able to take over a game or take over a shift and change the momentum of what you're looking at with the Kings is something different that we really haven't seen.
It's not the way the team has generally been built, but it's something that we've kind of alluded to in the podcast and, you know, dating back to last season. Like when you look at some of the players that have been brought in, you know, they brought in Arvidsson a couple of years ago. They bring in Fiala. You know, I know Deneau is more of a two-way center. And then you've got these young, exciting offensive prospect defensemen in Jordan Spence. And you had Durzi before he was traded. And you've got Brant Clark as your gem. You've got prospects like Byfield and Kaliev. It's like this team is not a team that's built from the roster that you're putting together to win 3-2, 2-1 games. So, you know, don't play that way. You know, if you've got a team that can get up and get after it, then get up and get after and put pucks in the net. And especially if you've got, you know, Kempe's established himself as a 35-40 goal scorer. You've got Fiala. These are legitimate offensive threats. Obviously, Kopitar, you know, Pierre Dubois has never been like an elite producer, but he's been a consistent, you know, mid-60s type of point getter, which I think there's no reason why he can't do that and then some. So, yeah, I mean, if your team is kind of built this way, find a way to make it work where you're going to – you can't sit back – and play a defensive style when you have the goaltending that they have. Like you kind of have to just, you know, trust that when you're in the D zone that you've got the strong centers and you've got your defensive defensemen throughout to not give up any high danger chances. Which that's why they've gotten the goaltending they've gotten. It's what they don't give up a lot of high danger chances as a team. They haven't for a couple of years, but don't be afraid to get after it offensively. And I would say so far they haven't.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see the team and how it's been brought together with that. And it's almost like you look at the NFL when these quarterbacks are drafted and it's like the offensive coordinator builds an offense around the quarterback, right? Like the Eagles built an offense around Jalen Hurts to make him successful. And it's like when you have certain players on your team and you're trying to make them fit into a mold that they don't fit in or are not accustomed to fitting in, rather than just letting them play how they were supposed to play. It's like, you can't cage Kevin Fiala. You got to deal with the bad and the good. And then hopefully there's more good. And this team is more often than not going to surprise some people. Just like we just got surprised with our main man, Russell Morgan.
Russell, how we doing?
Doing good. Just got caught up in a little bit of that LA traffic, but otherwise I'm feeling pretty good. How you guys doing? Brandon, it's good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, buddy. And in case people are noticing now, well, we built a new little backdrop where Russell did go in the old school colors there. The
love it.
The purple and yellow there fits perfectly with us three. It wasn't really working well with just Joe and I. So now glad you came it. In and out. Now it's spot on. It's spot on there. So obviously you see we're talking about depth scoring and how this team is built. And, you know, we're seeing a lot more track meets this month. And to where is that just kind of a we're going to have to live with these types of games where it's going to be 5-4 or, hey, we're down 4-1, but we're never out of it. We could see a team, you know, push it to OT. Is that just the new Kings? Is that what we're seeing this month? Is this a season long kind of prediction for how this offense is going to function?
This could be a season long thing. I mean, I said the other day, we're long past the 3-2 games from the Daryl Sutter era. I mean, I'm pretty sure we talked at the beginning before the season started that, I mean, if you're a betting guy, you might as well bet all the overs of all the Kings games. You'd probably be a pretty rich guy if you had already. But, I mean, 27 goals scored in 6 games, that's a lot. That's a lot of offense. And, of course, with all the question marks coming into the season in terms of goaltending and with some of the kind of, to quote McClellan, a lot of stupid mistakes that had been happening to start the year that we kind of saw a little bit last year at the beginning of the year, those have kind of crept in to the game, which is hopefully those get fixed. But when you have an offense like the Kings have, where you're able to score 4, 5, 6 goals a night, I guess those are a little bit more forgiven. But like I said, you hope to see those cleaned up a bit as the season progresses.
Now, with the way they're scoring now, Tom Cruise comes in here and asks, can you see Kopitar being a point-per-game player with how this team is? I know we all predicted Fiala to be that guy this year. But can Kopi in the father time, can he beat it one more time and be that point-per-game player this season?
I think so. I mean, I think a lot of it is predicated on just how his line mates do as a whole. I mean, Quentin Byfield, kind of off to a slow start, I would say. Adrian Kempe, I mean, you can definitely say he's off to a slow start just by what he did last year. But I would expect Kopitar to still be up around 65-plus points, maybe hovering around 70. I think asking him to be a point-per-game player isn't probably not what this team needs. He just needs to be that typical two-way centerman that Kopitar has always been. If he gets 65-plus points, totally fine with that. When you have the offense down the line, like we talked about with the depth, when you have Kevin Fiala, Pierre-Luc Dubois, I mean, even Trevor Moore is starting to pick it up like Joe had predicted he would. I mean, it's not really a necessity to have Andre Kopitar be that point-per-game player. I mean, it would be great, yeah. But I think there's a lot of offense that could be found on other ways in this lineup.
I probably would have said no at the start of before the season, and I would still say I would lean to the no on this, that I would take the under if he plays 82 games and it's going to be, you know, more closer to like 75, as Russ says. But, you know, he's putting up some good points at the start of the season here, and his line mates haven't gotten off to a blazing start in terms of their production anyways. So, I mean, I suppose if once Kempe eventually heats up and if Byfield ever finds the back of the net consistently, that maybe there could be something to it. But I do think Russ is right. You're probably looking at somebody more in the 70 to 75 range, which he's been that for most of his career.
Yeah, so let's get into this next topic here, and it's kind of an interesting topic, and it's going to be called stats versus tape. So what we've seen on the screen and what the stats are telling us, and do they go in the same direction or they go in opposite directions? And this could be a line mate, this could be a specific player, and kind of digging deep into and where we're going. I know the stat man, as I call him here, Joe, you're going to get us started here, man. So where are you seeing the stats and the tape, and how do they differ maybe?
Well, so far, I mean, I think anyways, the Kings as a team have looked pretty good overall, I would say. I know some of the results early on have been a little shaky, but when, you know, I look at where they're at from like an expected goals standpoint, they're first in the league. So I'd say that's pretty good. And I think in large part of that is because they're doing a pretty good job, as they historically have done, of limiting high danger chances. You know, that's the biggest reason I think that the Kings could come into this season with the goaltending duo that they have, is because they don't give up a lot of dangerous chances, and that's continued. So from a team aspect, I kind of think it's actually been, I would imagine, I guess I don't know, perhaps people in the comments, if they have some thoughts. I mean, I don't think that, I think the concern for most people right now is goaltending. I don't think that anything's been alleviated there. And I would say that that still is fair. Like the save percentage is not very good right now, even despite the fact that Kings are not giving up very many dangerous chances. So from a team aspect, I do think that they're off to a good start. The record is probably maybe underwhelming for what I think has been a decent start. There's been some sloppiness, but that's going to happen at the start of a season. You know, individually or line wise, we can certainly, you know, talk about some players and some things that you know are happening. But from an overall team standpoint, I would say it's things are going pretty good.
Well, you brought it up a little bit in the group chat, and this is why I got to this topic. Was you brought up some stats about Trevor Lewis, and I thought it was interesting because the recency bias is that, you know, Trevor Lewis is back. He's helping this team out. We spent 20 minutes talking about depth scoring, how the fourth line is firing on all cylinders. But the advanced stats are telling you something different than maybe what the tape is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's obviously there's a couple of things. It's obviously important to remember it's a small sample. We have six games worth of you know information, so it's not a lot. But the other side of that coin is we really don't have six games. We have two full seasons. You know, we talked about this trade when it happened. We have two full seasons of his data in Calgary where he was objectively probably their worst forward for 2 years. So I mean, I kind of hate this topic, frankly, because he's a feel-good story, because everybody loves Trevor Lewis. I love Trevor Lewis, right? I just think if he wasn't a King 10 years ago, they wouldn't sign him, because I just, you know, and every number that I've looked at and three different sites, you could look at however you want, it just hasn't been good from a possession standpoint, from a expected goal standpoint, from a relative possession standpoint, from a relative expected goal standpoint, from a Corsi against, expected goals against. You look at the performance of the team when he's on the ice versus when he's not on the ice. Virtually every single player on the roster performs better possession and expected goals away from him, with the exception, ironically, of Drew Doughty, who happens to be his best friend, which is kind of hilarious to me. fitting, I guess. And I hate to talk, like, I hate the topic, because it's like, I don't want to be the guy sitting here like bashing Trevor Lewis. I like the guy. It's just, I don't understand what, I'll say this. I don't think the Kings, and I thought it was a little funny, because he scored the other day, and there's, you know, there was some, you know, maybe his agents, and he's got agents in the Twitterverse that are like, aha, see, he is good. It's like, okay, he's going to get his 15 points. If you play 80 games, he's going to pick up 15 to 20 points. Obviously, I'm not going to sit here and say he's going to score zero goals and get zero assists. It's just, if we're looking at it objectively, and I try.
Which is the whole point of this.
I try my hardest, and it's very difficult to be a fan of a team, a fan of the Kings, a fan of Trevor Lewis, who was such an important piece to the Kings lineup a decade ago, and have to now say, guys, if we look at this objectively, there's better options. Like, this wasn't really a route that you had to go, but here's what I think. I don't think the Kings care. I think the Kings didn't sign Lewis, and maybe to a lesser extent, Englund, we can sort of talk about that in a different aspect, I guess, but I don't think they signed Lewis to be like for his on ice performance, because the Kings aren't a stupid organization. I think they're pretty smart. They signed him for the intangible stuff, right? They signed him for locker room. They signed him for leadership. They signed him for camaraderie. They didn't sign him for on ice. So I think they don't care if his on ice performance, his on ice play, his impacts, which at the moment are all negative. I don't think they care, as long as the team is successful and he's not like outwardly like tanking the roster, which he's not. I wouldn't say he's doing that. Then I don't think they care. I think they knew what they were getting when they signed him, and they signed him for a reason. It's the same reason, like, it's the idea anyways, like Toronto has no business having Ryan Reeves in their lineup, but they brought him in for the, not for his play, but for the intangible stuff. Now, obviously what Lewis is bringing intangible wise is a little bit different than Reeves, but same idea. Like, I don't think he was brought in to be like, you know, a positive impact player on ice. I genuinely, I don't think that they can have thought that.
I will say, I think he's doing I don't know if he's doing a great job on the penalty kill, but the team seems to be doing better on the penalty kill, and he's getting a lot of time on ice. That's kind of the main focus point. But I mean, I kind of agree with you. I think a lot of people were just wondering, like, why didn't Jared Anderson Dolan give that spot? Why isn't Alex Turcotte? Why'd you waste Sam Ifeanyi instead of signing Trevor Lewis? So I get those arguments, and that's where I kind of like, I feel that, where you have a player like Jad who's put in the time and effort and like, okay, now there's finally that roster spot available, but oh, here comes Trevor Lewis that hasn't really performed so well on ice in the last few years, and now he's kind of taking that spot. But it's kind of like, you don't really know. That's kind of more of a hypothetical situation.
Let me ask you this. If Trevor Lewis wasn't an LA King Cup champion, would they have signed him? And or would they have gone after would they have addressed that spot? Were they looking to fill fourth line winger? They didn't want to fill it from within. They didn't want to fill it with a prospect. They wanted to fill it with a veteran. Do you think that was going to be the case, regardless if it was Lewis or somebody else?
To answer your first question, I would say no. If he wasn't a King, I don't think they would have signed him. But to answer your second question, I think they were looking for depth,
okay,
a depth piece. And that's more specifically to help with maybe the penalty kill. And like I mentioned, that's what Trevor Lewis kind of specializes in, or that's what he's been his entire career. So I'll say that. I would say
no and no. Yeah. And I think, Joe, and I kind of agree with you. I've been watching the Wrexham documentary on Hulu.
Fantastic.
And they brought in this guy Foster, who's a 40-year-old goalie, and the other goalie has only lost two games all season. But they brought this guy in mid-season. He started his career in Wrexham. He's like an English phenom or whatever in his prime. But they brought him in for his intangibles, as well as he can be significant enough in the goal. But he brought him to push him over the top. And I think, Joe, the reason you're 100% correct in the reason they brought him in is that they believe that what he does outside of his play is going to be enough to push the consistency of that bottom six into a more permanent area in when it comes time for playoff hockey.
Yeah, I think that's as simple as that. Like, I genuinely don't think that they're overly concerned about his on-ice play, unless it becomes like so detrimental, which again, I don't think that that's the case. Then I think they're fine with it, especially if the team is winning.
You know, I will say this. I mean, come playoff time, I'd probably rather have a player like Trevor Lewis in the lineup over Jared Anderson Dolan or young Alex Turcotte. That's
today you would, but if hypothetically you had a season's worth of Turcotte, say, you may think different.
True.
But you're very right. True. Like I get, and again, the whole experience, it depends. Like, do you care, or do you put weight or stock into, you know, locker room leadership, that, which by the way, as somebody who has played, obviously not at that level, I currently coach, I do appreciate that. I struggle with how to measure it when what we have available to us publicly anyways, I know there's private metrics as well that teams have that are not, you know, available to us. You know, it's hard for me to look at the publicly available data and be like, oh, you seems like a miss of an opportunity. But if the team's like, yeah, buddy, the boys love him, he's in the room, great calming leadership, you know, talk to some younger guys. So again, that's the direction that they want to go. I get it. I don't have to agree with it, but I get it.
So Russ, you know, Joe's already brought up that the stats kind of back what the team is doing as a whole. We've talked about Trevor Lewis. Is there a player or a line that maybe the stats align with what we're seeing, or maybe they kind of diverge off of what the tape is throwing out there?
Well, it's funny because not even to focus on a player or a line, I want to focus on the whole team, and I want to look at the high danger chances against. And if you've watched the first six games so far, I mean, to me, it surprises me to think that the Kings are actually first in the league in giving up the fewest high danger chances against per 60, which is, that caught me off guard. You watched the game, especially the game, this last game against Arizona, where it just seemed like they were getting chances left and right. And to be honest with you, if it weren't for Phoenix Copley performing at the level he was, that game probably would have been like 5-5, 6-5 at some point. So that kind of caught me off guard. And that's something that I guess when you have two of the top pairs that we've talked about with Mikey Anderson and Drew Doughty and Gavrikov and Roy, those two, I mean, I highlighted Gavrikov and Roy. I can highlight them again. I just think they're going to be one of the best defensive pairs in terms of analytics, from an analytical standpoint in the NHL, not in terms maybe of production, but just limiting the chances against while they're on the ice. They've always been a high, I guess, shot attempt shared pair when Gavrikov first came over last season. They're continuing it this year. The thing that I guess maybe might be a little disappointing, and maybe what we kind of expect, is they're one of the worst teams in terms of 5v5 save percentage. But then you look at, like, they're like the fourth worst team, and the other three teams below them, the Minnesota Wild, Edmonton Oilers, and Calgary Flames. So that's the thing that we talked about coming into the year, is like, yeah, the Kings don't maybe have the best goaltending, but if you look at the Pacific Division as a whole, no team does. Look at the Oilers right now. They're falling apart. Same thing with the Calgary Flames. So that's why when you have this offense that the Kings have, and you just limit as many high danger chances against, like they seem to be doing, I think the goaltending will eventually kind of come to form. And we're seeing Talbot the last few games play a little bit better. Copley had a better game. You want to see a little bit better performance from him too, but going forward. But I think if that continues in terms of limiting all those high danger chances, I think we'll see some better goaltending because of it.
Yeah, it's almost like a basketball team that doesn't let you shoot from inside the paint. And like, hey, like shoot a bunch of threes. If you make them, we'll take the loss. But most of the time, you know, we'll take the stats, like, you know, that end up being in our favor. Joe, can a team, obviously we said they were run and gun when we said the depth scoring, and they're limiting the high danger chances from what they're trying to do in the zone exits with what we talked about with the type of defenseman that you like, when you limit high danger chances, obviously the pucks usually go towards the corners. Have the defenseman done a good job at the zone exits in your mind that kind of limit the high danger chances, and then they're able to escape the zone?
I think they've done a good job for the way the Kings want to do it. You know, this again, the defensemen that the Kings have are not exactly, you know, they're not known for being great puck movers. That's not their forte. Like, you think Matt Roy, Gavrikov, Mikey Anderson, Andreas Englund, these aren't guys that are smooth with the puck or great with the puck in terms of making quick plays or these first passes necessarily, but that's not always how the Kings want to do it anyways. As long as they get that puck to the neutral zone, bang, the wingers can go and they want to create off the rush. So I think they're doing a good enough job in that sense. Zone exits is something where, you know, Corey Schneider on all three zones tracks it. It's something that if anybody wants to replace my regular job salary, I would love to do that, because that is one of the things I'd love to track, is zone exits and zone entries and stuff. But part of that is again, it's how the Kings want to do it. Like, the Kings as a system, you know, they may not be a team that wants to necessarily make these tic-tac-toe plays out of the zone, because they're not built that way. Right. They're comfortable saying, all right, I got the puck, I get it, I'll make sure I can get it to the neutral zone somehow, whether that's just throwing it to space and letting somebody skate into it. They may be okay with that. Where you look at a team like a Colorado, they're going to pass their way right around you because the defensemen they have are just, that's their strength. They're significantly better in that sense. So, you know, the zone exit stuff can be a little, I don't want to say misleading, because I don't think that's fair, but it could be system oriented too, right? Of how the coach and how the team wants to do it. And if we're being honest, like, that's just not the way the Kings defensemen are built. That's just not what they do. It's not their strength. So they're playing to the strength of the defenseman, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it's the 1-3-1 system, right? Right. I mean, this is the team that's going to get a lot of their chances just off counterattacks. I mean, they lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, what was it, Mike Kelly that shared that graphic the other day, that was the Dubois line and I believe the Kopitar line, that were like, had in total 18 rush chances to zero against. Yeah. So they're going to force you to dump the puck in, and then they're going to go. And yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing. I mean, I think, and some of the NHL edge data which is a lot of it we're still trying to figure out, and there's maybe not too much to look into. But the one thing I looked at was the zone time, and the Kings were one of the fewer teams in terms of percentile, or lower teams in terms of percentile in offensive zone time, mm-hmm. which kind of makes sense because if they're just going to be counterattacking,
yep.
they're not going to be in the zone that often. They're going to be spending yep. a lot of time in their own zone, getting pucks out, trying to play that 1-3-1 system where that puck's going to get dumped in. And then they're just going to, like I said, they're just going to turn and go. So
yeah.
I think this is a team that's going to be figuring out a lot. They're going to get a lot of their scoring chances from those counterattacks.
And I'd say that I saw that too from, and I know a lot of people are like, well, look at the Kings. They're limiting the rush chances. Of course they're limiting the rush chances. They play 1-3-1. That's that. If you're not limiting rush chances, you've got a problem. If the Kings are not a top 3-5 team at worst in terms of limiting rush chances, we got a problem. Their whole system is designed on limiting rush chances, right? So I see that, and that's great, but that's exactly what they're supposed to do. That's how they're built. So I don't look at that and be like, holy cow, this is incredible. It's like, no, this is exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. I think they're just more effective at the counterpunch. And UFC sure. great UFC great Chuck Liddell, he built his entire career off it, right? He's just trying to dodge the head and weave, and then he throws his haymaker. And I think you're seeing the Kings are doing just that. They're like, hey, we'll wear some pucks off the chest this game, and then we're just going to try to slingshot out of this and get the rush chances. And it's been pretty interesting on how the team's been functioning there. And you're going to see some games where the puck's not going to go our way, we're not going to get the shots, and then other games where we're going to put up 5 or 6 goals. I think that's just going to be this team this whole year. So before I get going into my little stat versus tape, Lee coming in here, put your likes up, fellas. We need more people in here. Appreciate that for helping us out. And who's always helping us out is our sponsor here at DraftKings. The NFL season is going strong, and DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking up new members with an offer that's even stronger. Just bet $5 on any game this week to score $200 instantly in bonus bets. As DraftKings isn't stopping here, all customers can take advantage of the sweetener every game day in October. I pulled up the NHL betting odds and it said NFL, but you can bet tomorrow night. Kings are with the -1.5 goal favorite is +180. If you just want to take the money line, -142. Over-under is 6.5 goals. As Russ has been saying, you might want to take a look at those there. I can't give legal betting advice, so don't come at me there. But, you know, take a look at the odds at DraftKings, always getting you the best for all your sports betting needs. Again, use code THPN, DraftKings Sportsbook. Get in the game. Game day greatness. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code THPN. New customers can score $200 instantly in bonus bets. When you bet on 5 on the NFL, that's code THPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown can be yours. So I want to get into obviously I've only been watching a little bit of the last two games and, you know, seeing people online, calling Kempe an empty net merchant. Right. And you don't end up being that way with 40 goals, but it's been pretty interesting for me because there was a comment made in the last broadcast that I'll get into and why this kind of brought it up for me, the stats versus tape. What Kempe has looked pretty good for me, but the puck hasn't been going in on him. He hasn't been getting those rush chances where he's sniping it in. And I'm going to bring in these graphs that my buddy Joe here sent me here. So if I pull this up here. Let me put away the banner there so everybody can see a little bit better. So with Kempe, you look at the 5-on-5 shot chances here, right? So,
and sorry, real quick, these are from Hockey Viz. Hockey Viz is the website. Micah Blake McCurdy on Twitter at Ineffective Math does a really, really good job. I actually like a lot of the visuals that are on his site. So just as a just making sure we're, you know, credit to who I certainly as hell didn't come up with this. So hockey business is where it comes from.
Appreciate that, Joe. You got to give credit where credit's due. So with Kempe, 63 minutes, the goals 4 per 60 is 3.09, which is plus 10%, compared to the rest of the roster. Where it looks here as when I put up the main thing you see here in the middle is right in front of the net frame. That is about as red as you can possibly be. And what Kempe is going to do and what we've noticed is he skates up the side, creates and pulls defenders to his way and allows other line mates, Byfield and Kopitar, to clean up pucks around the net if he doesn't score off the first chance. So you're pulling defenders out of the center of the ice. And as you see here where my little, I don't know if you can see my mouse, but right in the center in front of the goal there, and then off to the left, because he normally skates up that right side. So you're getting the rebounds there, and you're getting a lot of secondary chances from the center of the ice and up the left side. So Kempe, even though he hasn't had any goals that have been 5-on-5 or non-empty net goals, he's still creating, or the lines that he's creating on are creating high percentage chances where it matters in front of the net and on and off to the left. Now, if I go here to the other one without him on there, let me put that up here, flip it over, a little flipperooski. Oh, where'd all that red go? Where'd all that red go, fellas? Look at that. That's about as ice cold as you can get in the center of the ice. So he's creating so many chances inside the crease in high danger areas because of his speed and mismatches that he's creating on the outside. I don't know about you, fellas. I don't like shots from way out here. Where's all the red in the center? And I think that's what Kempe does. And the stats haven't really come his way, but I believe that he's creating a lot of these chances, and the puck should fall with a little bit more puck luck next month.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, I looked at Kempe's stats just right now as we started talking about him. He's actually got a higher shot attempt per 60 than he had the last 2 years. So that's something to keep in mind. I mean, I wonder, the one thing I do wonder, though, is what's going to happen with Kempe on the power play. Because I've noticed, and I asked McClellan about this, is like, do you think, I asked him point blank, do you think teams are now going to start to take away Adrian Kempe's shot on the power play? And his answer was, they should. And just like other, he said, just like we, or just like the Kings strategized to take away like Alex Ovechkin's shot one timer on the power play, we'll probably be seeing other teams doing that to Adrian Kempe. This isn't a secret anymore. He's a 40 goal scorer in the NHL. The Kings had a top five power play in the NHL last year, and a lot of that was because of Adrian Kempe's one timer or his wrist shot from the circle. So that'll be something to watch to see how teams defend him and how they'll be able to get other looks. Or Kempe will be able to generate out of the looks on the power play too.
Yeah, and I think so. I'm with you, Randy. I think Kempe has been fine. I think that line as a whole has been pretty good. I'm sure Byfield is a totally separate conversation that we can have or we cannot have it. I'll leave that to you guys, I guess. But I do think Kempe is playing. I think he's playing well. I think the goals obviously haven't come yet. But I think you're right, Randon. I think the metrics back it up. I think his play backs it up. I think he's played very well. I think the goals will come. To Russ's point, for me, I think this all goes back to, you know, like what Russ had said and McClellan talked about too, is not having that righty down low, because, you know, it's
on the power play, right?
On the power play, yes. Thank you. Because Kempe really is that trigger man on the right circle for the one timer. And so in order to get that trigger man, it's probably, I mean, it can come from Doughty at the top, but that's really predictable. And that's really not getting the goalie moving side to side enough. That's probably got to come from Kevin Fiala on the left side, maybe Kopitar. But you also, you lose a little bit of that by having it be a lefty Dubois down low, just because he, you know, his strong side is going to be Kempe's side. And you'd prefer his strong side to be the other side. You can kind of lull some things to sleep when you've got Dubois now, but you had Arvidsson, you had Vilardi last year being able to make the little triangle play to the bumper. That's just a little less of a possibility now. Things are just a little bit different. And I saw last game, it seemed, at least to me in my eyes anyways, that the Kings were doing way more movement off the puck. You know, there's a lot more switches, a lot more, you know, you saw Doughty move, you saw Kopitar come up, you saw Kempe up high at times, really a lot of shifting around of the players. And I think my guess is that's by design, because, you know, McClellan talked about it, about having no righty down low as well. And that, you know, they're trying to find different looks. They're still getting used to that because they're used to having that righty down low, and that's not there now. So I think that movement that we saw with the players off the puck, creating different looks, trying to open up different passing lanes, I think they did that. I don't think the power plays looked all that bad, to be honest with you. I mean, I know it's you know, not clicking at the percentage that it was last year, but
18.5, but the penalty kill's up at 87.
Yeah, I think the power play has looked maybe overall better than they've performed, like better than the 18%. Like I don't think it's, I don't hate the way it's looked right now. And I thought it looked pretty good against Arizona at times. I think it was Boston the first period. I think it was the first period against Bob. They lived in Arizona. You know, I thought they looked really good. Yeah. So like, and they moved it around. They had some good chances. So I think all this to say, I'm not worried about Kempe right now. I think he's playing well. I think he's getting chances. They're just not falling right now.
Is the loss of Victor Arvidsson understated based on what he was bringing down low on the power play? Cause that's where he was stationed. He was their righty.
Yeah. He came into play. I mean, listen, Victor Arvidsson does so much for this team at five on five. He was obviously excellent. And he was obviously, like we talked about after the Velarde trade, you know, when he was gone. So one of the first things I thought about was like, he was their down low guy, their righty down low, and they're losing that. So who's it going to be? Obviously Arvidsson was the logical choice. And you saw was one of the preseason games. Now the play went, I think it was from, it was either Doughty, it might have been Fiala, but now I'm drawing a blank. It was a while ago. Makes a pass down to the left corner, to the bottom of the left circle, to Arvidsson, who, again, as that righty, immediately gets it and fires it cross-seam the other way back to Kempe, who hammered it home on a one-timer. The play doesn't exist anymore. It can't exist right now. So there is just a difference. And, yeah, I think the loss of Arvidsson, you know, is a big deal in a number of ways, and the power play included.
I know there's a righty that Russell's pretty fond of. I don't know if you've heard of him, Alex Laferriere. Do you just, is it time to put him on the power play?
I mean, he's been on the second unit. I don't think he was on the second unit last game. I could be wrong, but either. I'm not going to be so much of like a total homer and say, yeah, I just put him on the first power play unit. But yeah, I don't know, maybe. It's crossed my mind. I'll say
that's Russell for, yeah, put him in there. That's
the
that's
reason. The reason I'll say no is only because, at least, and it, we're early days here, like our, in terms of our getting a real feel for who Alex Laferriere is as a player. He clearly looks as somebody who loves to shoot the puck, right? So that's not to say he can't be a playmaker down low. But I do think you need to have that guy down low. He needs to be an effective passer and a quick decision maker. You know, I'm open to seeing it, but I also don't think you need to go that route quite yet, because I don't think the unit with Dubois down low has shown to be ineffective. So I think if it gets to that point and it gets to a situation where Kempe's not getting the looks, because think about it, like there's no way Kempe can get a pass from Dubois in a one-time situation like he could have from Arvidsson, the way the Kings set it up. So if it becomes an issue, I'm open to it, but I there's reasons to maybe not do it right away, and I think that it's looked okay right now with Dubois.
If this team hadn't scored 27 goals already on the season, I think we'll be asking, but in terms of offense production, I think we're fine. The power play you keep that too,
and there's been really no shuffling of the lines at all. I mean, you had the suspension early in the season, of course, to Kaliev, but once he got back, it's been stable, and it's hard to argue. I mean, the way they're going, like really the only line that hasn't kind of production wise has been the Kopitar line. That was the best line of the season last year. So they're in a decent spot, I would say, in terms of how things are going. And I don't think there needs to be a shakeup of the lines personally.
Excuse me for being Kylo Ren and just wanting more, you know. So, I interesting in why I also think Kempe is destined here is I wanted to bring this up, a little quick topic, and it was something that interesting that was said on the last broadcast, in that Kempe is using advanced data or advanced metrics to help his game as a scorer, and so where he's taking his shots from, where he's getting the looks, how fast he has to shoot from each position, where is he setting up, and his injuries and all that kind of stuff like that are dictating how he's playing with his line mate. Obviously now we're in, you know, a little over two seasons with Kopitar, almost at a full season with the Byfield edition, but like, where is he getting all these looks here? Not only in the power play, but five on five and the advanced data, and using that to figure out where he needs to be and how people are playing him. Russ, you brought up the point, as defenses are going to change how they play the Kings on the power play based on a 40 goal score. So in order to stay ahead of the game, he's using metrics to counteract what teams are doing to him and how he can still be an effective scorer, not only 5-on-5, but on the power play.
Yeah, I think the one thing that actually, when I saw you want to talk about this, is when I looked back to when Kempe just all of a sudden blossomed into this, I think it was 2 years ago when he had that 30-goal kind of breakout mm-hmm. season. And a lot of it was just because he shot the puck more. In the season 2020 and 2021, he had 8 shots per 60. That next season, when he got 30-plus goals, he was at 10.2 shots per 60. So I don't know if it was just more or less just, hey, Adrian, you have this shot. You have that one-timer. Let's just see you start shooting the puck more. Or if it was more about, hey, where can I go and pull and to get the those opportunities to put the puck on net. A lot of that has to do probably with playing with Kopitar and more steady basis.
I think that does too, but I've noticed a lot more with Kempe in the last two seasons with him taking the puck down the ice and rifling that shot.
Yeah.
You know, like and being able to hit it. So I think his ability has gone up. I think that his willingness to shoot has gone up. And I think when you get into that kind of point in your career now, then you got to start when they start falling, then you have to keep that up. Like when you get to a certain level, you got to be able to find any edge that you can to stay at that level. And I think it's good that he's diving in and using the data that's available to him in order to keep up this level of production.
And, you know, to that point, I think there's something that gets lost sometimes in the whole conversation around analytics. And that's, you know, and I'm somebody obviously that uses them heavily and I believe in them and I trust them for the most part. They're never perfect. They're never going to be 100%. Nothing is. You know,
and teams don't have analytics departments for nothing.
Right. Thank you. but I think it's really important because, and I players, it's not their job. Like there may be players, you know, Kempe talked about it, that are interested in it, you know, and that's perfectly fine. But it is not the player's job to know or understand what their analytics really even are. That's the coach's job and the player's development staff job to put them in the best position to be successful based on the data that they have. So when we're talking about players, or I'm talking about Trevor Lewis, you know, he may not have a clue what his, and he shouldn't really care if he's, you know, he's, well, he certainly shouldn't care what the hell I say. That is for sure. But really, like a lot of these players, like go play your game, go play. Like if there's something that is tangible that a coach can say, hey, you're doing this because I'm seeing this or whatever, fine, and make those tweaks. But it is not always the players that, it's not ever the players that need to be focused on the analytics. That I, you know, unless they're interested in it and like the way Kempe is, don't even bother. It's up to the coaches, put them in the best positions to, you know, to succeed.
Yeah, I'm not saying that every kid needs to know what his Corsi is, but it's nice to know how people are defending you and what they're doing to try to take away what you do best. And so it's, you know, kind of that counteract in that type of thing. And I think it's just interesting how, you know, you're looking at, like, it reminds me of what I heard in the baseball World Series, right? The Phillies have, what is that, Castellanos in right field. He's like the worst fielder in all of the MLB. And they've shade him to right center to where he's maybe 30 feet from the center fielder because the only direction that he can catch a fly ball is forward and to his glove side. So like they use the analytics to help their team out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something interesting about where the game is going and all these new advanced stats and slow motions and hot and cold targets and all this kind of stuff is how is this going to develop the game into where, hey, maybe, hey, this team plays me this way. Or this, as we get more data, this team plays me that way. And we need to be here in this situation on the power play because this is what they try to do here. And I think it's going to be interesting. And obviously the data set is going to get larger and larger and larger the more minutes and that he plays. But the fact that he's taking an initiative to it and seeing how people are trying to take away your game and how you adapt to it, I found it interesting that he's open to that.
Yeah.
And using it as an active tool to be a more effective goal scorer.
For sure. And kind of piggybacking off the conversation about the data, obviously Russ alluded to the NHL Edge data that's out there. And, you know, I mean, it's certainly interesting stuff. I mean, I think it's fun, you know, bar talk. who's the fastest skater or whatever. But I don't think there's a whole lot to glean from that necessarily. I think on its own, without context, I couldn't care less how fast somebody skates or how hard somebody shoots. However, if you were to tell me that I pick a player, Adrian Kempe, we're talking about, if Adrian Kempe has added 2 miles an hour to his speed burst on a consistent basis, like, okay, well, maybe something happened in the offseason. Maybe he did some different training in the offseason and he's got a step quicker and he's faster. Or conversely, maybe somebody is a step or 2 miles an hour, like, slower consistently. Well, maybe he's hurt. Like, is there a reason why he's that much slower than he was a month ago? Yeah. So that, you know what I'm saying? So stuff like that can be, and I have no idea if there's any validity to that, but what I'm saying is, I guess fast skater doesn't make you a good skater. Hard shot doesn't make you a good shot. You know, always understand that there's got to be some context with some of this stuff, but that said, it's fun. It's interesting. And it's just scratching the surface, I'm sure, of the data that we'll eventually get from the NHL.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a whole lot more.
Yeah.
We've gotten a little bit of data so far this season, and our next topic is P.L. Dubois' early impressions. Obviously, the big acquisition. We have a couple games under our belt, going buck wild in the preseason. Now we have some regular content coming in here. What have been your early impressions of P.L. and what he's brought and how that line has functioned? I know we know the main pair was going to be him and Fiala. How do they look together? And then just kind of take it to let it blossom however it may. And I'll start with Russ there.
It's weird because when you see the highlights and when that trade first happened, you want to look back at what P.L. Dubois is as a player. He comes across as like this big, hunking power forward who's willing to drive to the net. And it's funny because all of that's true. But then you watch some of the goals that he scored, like that goal against Minnesota where he just kind of kicked it and kind of stick on it. Like, it becomes even more surprising to me. Like, dude, this is a big, big dude. Like, this is some of the reverse hits he's doing. Like, I knew Dubois was a big, big forward. I didn't know he was this big, to be honest with you. He's only going to get bigger is the thing that I'm going to love about it. So, I mean, early impressions, been great, obviously. 3 goals so far. That line's been, I think, one of the better lines in terms of the Kings from a production standpoint. So, I mean, the early impressions look good. I mean, for those that maybe were worried about the trade or thought the Kings maybe give up too much, I think he's proving a lot of those people wrong, because some of the plays that he's making, it's not just like the goals. It's the hits. It's the reverse hits. It's the willing to take the puck to the net. Like, that kind of stuff that was missing so much from the Kings roster the last few years. I mean, and only just, we're only seeing just the start of this chemistry between him and Fiala. We always talk about how it's so hard to kind of acclimate yourself to the play style of Kevin Fiala. Well, P.L. Dubois acclimating himself pretty quickly. And those two have already had this chemistry start to blossom. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen when we get to game like 60, game 70 in the season, and see how that chemistry grows throughout the year. So early impressions have been great. I think Dubois is only going to become a bigger fan favorite in LA as the time goes by.
As advertised for me, just a thoroughbred out there, just an absolute horse. I mean, I think he's doing everything that the Kings could have wanted him to be doing. He's third on the team in shot assists at 5-on-5. He's second in overall shot contributions at 5-on-5. Second only behind his line mate. And no, it's not Kevin Fiala who led the team in shot contributions last year. It is Russell's Alex LaFerriere who leads the team in shot contributions. So that team, that line is clicking right now. The one thing I'll say with that line is, because we talked about with Dubois and Fiala, and I think we were originally talking about it with Kaliev, is how is that line going to be defensively? Is it going to be, what's it going to look like? I will say they are a pretty high event line. Like, they are not afraid to give up chances because they know they're going to get them. So
that's not surprising.
Yeah, I think almost any line that Kevin Fiala's on, I think that, and that's not to, I don't mean to shade him too hard on the defensive side, but I just kind of think like that's what it's going to be with that line. But more often than not, they're still, even though they may be high event, they're getting the better of those events. So, not anything that I'm concerned about at this point with that. But yeah, I think he's looked great, Randon. I think, you know, has there been one tweet about how lazy he looks or how disinterested he looks or anything like that? No. I mean, I think he has, like I said, for me, he's been as advertised. This is exactly the type of player that I expected.
So for being originally the most against this trade, and obviously I definitely came around. In the game and a half I've watched and the highlights, I've been very impressed. I think the main thing that stuck out to me is just, one, he's able to skate with Kevin Fiala at any time. So like his style is able to adapt to the rush style where he's been able to body people with one arm and score goals with one hand. And like he almost had another one the other night where he almost put it five hole between the goalie by just reaching it out and sticking it in there. And so I think you're looking at a guy who is more of a power forward than I thought. Like, I know he had his highlights were a lot of the gritty goals, but like you said, like the reverse checks, the hits, being able to control the wall play and adapt his style to, and which he said he would do. He said, I don't care who I play against. I'm going to adapt my style to be the most effective distributor. If they need me to score, I'll score. If they need me to assist, I'll assist. And I think he's done a good job. And then that line can counterpunch and get on the rush. That line can cycle with the best of them because Fiala will use his skating. PL will use his size down there. And I think, you know, LaFerriere has, you know, been a little bit snake bitten with his shots. Finally got one the other night. And so with that whole team right now, it's been kind of great to where PL has adapted his style to fit Fiala. And LaFerriere is just playing his game and he's being allowed to play his game.
Yep.
And where you're looking at where Kempe earlier in his career was saying, hey, like I was deferring to other players. And if LaFerriere was ever to defer to anybody, I mean, point per game player in Fiala and a guy that has done it all in PL Dubois, that those would be the two guys to do it. And I think they're allowing the kid, he hasn't been shy to shoot, which is nice. And they're just playing good hockey. And I'm fine with them being high event. This team's going to be high event, right? And so if we're using this analogy for the Kings being counterpunchers, what better line to be a counterpuncher than a team, a line that can cycle, a line that can get on its horse, a line that has anybody who can take over and take the puck through multiple people to have one-on-one chances with the goalie. I really think it's going to be interesting to see, as you said, Russ, as this team or as this line gets more and more minutes together, you know, what will they kind of mold into? Is it going to be only a counterpunch? Is it going to be a line where, hey, they're going to have multiple people doing multiple things? You know, I think that his faceoffs will only get better. I know there was a comment earlier in there that he was 1-for-14 against Minnesota. He openly said that he wants to get better at that at the beginning of the season, which I think that he's obviously going to continue to try to do with two of the best in Kopitar and Janot. So, for a guy who was, you know, obviously I came around, but all the stuff that I thought I was going to be worried about when it initially came down, I'm no longer worried.
Yeah, I think it's only a matter of time before this line just has a night where one of those players has like a Hattie or something like that. It's just a matter of time.
They according to Money Puck, they lead the Kings forward groups, forward lines, and expected goals for, and they've given up the most expected goals against. So again, that's expect that. I mean, this isn't going to be a Selke, Anže Kopitar, Philippe Deneau led line. There's going to be a little bit more of that of that kind of helter skelter out there, and I think in large part you've got Dubois, who is, you know, I think he's maybe better than was talked about defensively, but he isn't to the level of somebody like a Kopitar or Deneau, of course. But when you flank him with a rookie and Kevin Fiala, just do what you guys do. Just play your offense. Like, it is what it is at that point. I think you kind of know, you know, and I'd actually be curious to know, and I'll look at this while you guys go, because I would imagine that the Kings are going to probably play or try to play Gavrikov and Roy with that line as much as possible, because for obvious reasons, like that's their best shutdown pair. They're going to need some help out there. So, but all in all, I think that's fine. I got no problem with it. Get after it.
It's funny because that's what this line is being asked to do. They're not being asked to be that shutdown line. Look at what this team had last year. Last year, it was the Kopitar line and the Nice line. And then after that, it was take your guess who's going to be available. We even had Fiala playing with Grundstrom and Kupari for a little while, and that line was clicking. And after that, the bottom six was just a mix of guys that they were trying to find some offense from. But now you have the Kopitar line, you have Dano with Moore and Kaliev right now, and then you have PLD, Kevin Fiala, and Alex LeFerrier. The depth on this team, we already talked about depth scoring, but the depth on this team is just incredible right now. That's why I said at the beginning of the year, this is going to be one of the deeper teams this team, the Kings have had in quite some time. And we're seeing it right now. But just one quick note on LeFerrier that you talked about, Randon, when he's playing with players like PLD and Fiala. I actually asked him about it after the Boston game at a practice the day after. And I said, like, hey, you're shooting at a very high rate. Like, is this like something that's always been a part of the game or what's going on? He said, I've always kind of been a shooter ever since junior. And then he also mentioned, like, when you play with guys like Fiala and Dubois, you're kind of being looked at to be this no hesitation. Hey, if I get the puck at a certain spot, I need to be throwing it on net. And that's kind of what we're seeing. I mean, LeFerrier, he's a smart player coming from Harvard. Yep. You're seeing that hockey IQ come to play. So I think that's why that fit with him and with Fiala and Dubois has been working really well. And another thing that I thought was pretty funny that he mentioned to me after the Boston game where he scored his first goal against Boston. Of course, he grew up being a Bruins fan. I asked him, he's like, hey, what was it like playing against Marchand? And he said, you know, it's always kind of cool when you're rooting for him, but when you're playing against him, it's not so fun. I thought that was a hilarious comment. So, but you know, yeah, I think that line is just, it's just a matter of time before that line ticks off.
And I want to talk about this a little bit more, the depth. You know, it's kind of been a theme of today, I think, this show anyways. But so much of the talk about when they made the trade for Dubois was, wow, the Kings gave up a lot. And I had said, yes and no. They gave up quantity. I don't know how much quality they gave up. And that's not like, I know, I understand what Iafallo brings to the table. And I obviously am a big fan of Gabe Vilardi's, but when you're getting a player the caliber of Dubois at the position that he plays, the Kings, this is why you build the depth that they have. And look at all the depth that we're talking about. And that is with losing Vilardi, Iafallo, Kupari, Arvidsson's hurt. Fagimo was lost to waivers. And we're still just talking about the depth of this team's roster. Like, so yeah, going back to that trade, it was an absolute no-brainer of a trade. Like, I can't even – there's a no-brainer of a trade. Now, if people want to talk about the contract and the signing, that's, I guess, a little bit of a different part. But in terms of the assets traded, complete no-brainer.
You win down the middle.
And the amount of depth – Yeah, and the amount of depth that we're still talking about that this team has is just further evidence of that.
I mean, there's no mistaking center. Yeah, there's no mistaking that it did put us in a little bit of a cap bind, right? I mean, that's still apparent. That's fair. Still there. That's not going away. And whether you want to blame him or the Gavrikov signing or, you know, me earlier in the season before Trevor Moore, you know, made me crow the amount of money that he's getting, like wherever you want to point the blame. That they are in a cap bind, right? So would that have changed? Would we have had a better goalie situation if we, you know, we paid, you know, $1 million less or what was that, you know, $2 million less for Vilardi and, mm-hmm. and Iafallo? You know, who knows? We're not in that land though. And like you're seeing this line and what we saw out of the third line and the fact that pretty much Fiala had to drag whoever he was playing with at all times last season. That's not the case anymore. Right. And so he's not having to dangle through seven people, even though he still does it to get a goal. He can have and do different things. And I think that line is only going to progress there. That's funny that I like that Marchand comment though, because you're looking at like the Bruins played the Blackhawks like twice in the first like 2 weeks and the amount of clips of Marchand, like welcoming Bedard into the league is just, I was just cracking up. Like just pigeonhole him against the bench there. So
yeah, I remember it was like early part of that game, like Lucic took a run at him. I was like, that must be such an eye opener. Like you've been rooting for this guy your whole life. And then all of a sudden trying to destroy you in the corner. Like that must have been a fun moment for him.
Oh man, that's kind of funny. So,
by the way, Joe, your Calgary Flames are the gift that keeps on giving. By the way, is anybody going to show up to the Heritage Classic this weekend? I'm wondering. There's no Connor McDavid. Are they just going to go up there? All is everyone going to show up with paper bags on their heads?
Both fan bases will, I'm sure. Like, of those future bets, that one I feel the least good about. I'm San Jose. I might win that by like Christmas, but. And I feel pretty good about. I feel really good about that Anaheim one too. I think they're going to be fine. But
let's get into that with, because it kind of leads into the next topic, which is what do we want to see the rest of the month and going into November from this team, and maybe where can the changes be made? Right now, the Kings are in third, 7 points at 3-2-1, sitting behind the Golden Knights, who are undefeated, and the Vancouver Canucks, which. Really nobody thought about. They're 4-2-0, so they have 8 points there. But Ducks are right behind us. You know, Kraken and Flames are struggling. Edmonton Oilers and San Jose Sharks were never even a thought. So with this team and how they're playing right now, I think Kings fans would have liked to be a little bit better, but we're still in the playoff spot after 1 month or as of now. Where does this team need to make, you know, maybe some small tweaks to capture some more points going into November?
It's kind of hard because I don't know if there's necessarily small tweaks, but like I thought McClellan's stupidity comment was interesting. I'd like to see those mental lapses kind of go away. It's just pretty much like I mentioned earlier, it's what we saw at the beginning of last year. Just overall good play throughout the game, and then all of a sudden you have that one moment where all of a sudden there's a turnover right in front of Cam Talbot or Phoenix Kotick. So just clean up those moments. But I also do think that this is a really good opportunity. The Kings need to take advantage of what's going on in Edmonton and Calgary, like I talked about. Like, there's just turmoil going on in Alberta right now. The Sharks are going to be terrible. The Ducks are going to be entertaining, but I think they're still going to be a kind of a bad team. Vancouver's playing. They're playing pretty well. I wonder how consistent they'll be with that. But and the Golden Knights just seem like there's no hangover with them. So the Kings need to. They need to pick up some points here. There's a big road trip coming up. They're going to Toronto, Ottawa, and Philadelphia, and then they wrap it up in Vegas. So they play Vegas two of the next, like, seven games or so. So there's some big games coming up. So I hope the Kings can kind of get some points out of this long road trip and these tough opponents.
Speaking of Alberta, I don't think they play either Alberta team till almost Christmas, which is kind of odd.
The 23rd is when they play Calgary the first time.
Yeah, and I don't think they play Edmonton before that either. So it's pretty odd scheduling. Brandon, I think a couple of things. I kind of agree with Russ that overall, I just think a lot of this is going to settle. Like, I think we saw, and I think you're seeing this around the league too with some higher scores. I think we see that a lot at the early part of the season. Defensive zone structure, all that stuff is kind of, it takes a little bit more time for that to come. So I think it's not a surprise when there's a lot more goals at the early part of the season. But I think that's going to come. I trust that McClellan will have that sorted, you know, sooner than later. Like Russell, we saw this last year. It's, you know, maybe not the exact problem, but it looks pretty similar to our eyes that eventually got itself sorted. And I'm confident that it will again. The other thing is, you know, it seemed, and I don't know what your thought on this, Russ, if you agree with me on this, but I really, really, really did not like they need to rotate these goalies. The Kings don't have a number one goalie. I don't understand. Like so they split the first two games. Talbot wins in Winnipeg. They go back to Talbot in Minnesota. Okay. He wins again. They travel, they go back home, and they got Talbot again against Boston. I can't disagree more with that. Now, I'm not saying that Talbot, that's nothing against Talbot. He obviously won the two games prior, and I don't think it was his fault that they lost to Boston, but Talbot is not this team's number one goalie. He's not playing 50 games. To play him three games in five nights with travel across the board, I didn't understand that because Copley went, he ended up playing Tuesday, but there's a lot of like, hey, just keep riding Talbot. He's playing well. If he would have played Tuesday, Copley would have gone 2 weeks without a start. Can't have it. Cannot have it with these two goalies that they have right now. They've got to be rotated. They've got to be both playing and both fresh, because unless one of them is, and I'm not even going to say running away with the starter's job, because I don't want to ride either one. Unless one of them is just can't make a save for the life of them, you got to rotate these guys. Maybe if it's not a true every other game rotation, if it's like some guy may play a couple in a row, but for the most part, you got three games and five nights, two on the road, and the third one is you're going back to LA for a travel. Boy, I thought that was was too much to ask of Talbot. You know, again, you have to understand he's got these, what, 36 or whatever, 37. He's had injury histories. That wasn't the time to play him in that type of a stretch, in my opinion. I don't think there should, and I said it after one of the, I think it was, I wrote one of the post games, I think Minnesota, so I'd absolutely go to Talbot in Boston against Boston. You know, there's no need to anoint anybody right now. It's way too early in the season. And, you know, I got a little bit of pushback. I'm like, well, obviously Talbot's the number one. Why? Absolutely not. I don't understand that logic that he's number one. So I'd like to see a little bit more of a stricter rotation with the goaltenders to make sure they're both involved and they're both fresh.
It's just modern day sports. Like, it's just recency bias. Like, hey, the first two games, the goalies looked ridiculously bad. And then we get one good game out of Talbot. We get another good game. They're like, oh, yeah, that's the guy. Let's ride him in. He's playing 80 games this season, or 81, you know, sorry, Phoenix Copley. You know, that's what it is. I think you're 100% correct. And that might be one of the most astute analysis for this month, is that this season isn't going to be won in October. Like, both these guys need to be fresh.
Yes.
They both, you know, especially with what this team is going to, looks like it's going to be, is this counteract team. Both these goalies are going to be asked to make that one extra save to get us going. And if they're both, you know, both tired, or one of them's tired and then the other one can't make a save, then you're riding the goalie that is giving you the chance. You're not allowing the other guy to break out of the slump. I think it's going to be, you know, I think this team can win a lot of games if the goals against average is right around that 2.9-3.0, because we're going to be scoring 4 or 5 goals a game. So they just need to be good enough, and they need to be rotated to keep them fresh. And I think that's a very astute way to look at it.
Well, and McClellan knew that. I mean, he said at the start of the season, and I want to say it was one of the Behind the Glass episodes, he was like, I don't, you know, goalies are split in the first two games, and it doesn't matter if he's getting, Talbot could have a 40-save shutout, you know, Copley's going the next game. That's the mindset that it's got to be. Just because he wins a game in Winnipeg and then wins again in Minnesota, it's not like, oh, we got to go back to him. Why? What is different a week later that you were changing that mindset? And let's be honest, it's not as if Talbot, yeah, he won those two games. They weren't exactly 35 save shutouts in those games. So I don't want to like belabor the point and just make it bigger, a bigger thing than it is. It's just, I really think you've got to lean on both of these goalies. You need them both fresh. You need to know. You need to learn. You need to know if Copley can't make a save over a stretch. You got to know that, and you got to figure that out. And then so you know what you got to address as you get to, you know, the second half of the season and the deadline. But you're not going to know that if you play them once every 2 weeks. So this needs to be a more, I want to see a more consistent rotation. I saw a comment, I think King's Rule or somebody asked the question about like who starts tomorrow. I don't even have a preference. I don't care, as long as they're splitting, which I'm sure they are, it's back to back, but just split the next two games. I don't care which one it is right now. It's way too early for this stuff. You know, the Kings don't have a number one goalie, period. They got two goalies. Split them both until one of them shows that they can't do it.
I'm seeing a lot of 1A, 1B. It's more like 2A, 2B.
Go ahead, Brandon.
And I think they need the split for different reasons. I mean, Talbot's older. He just needs a little bit more rest. He's not able to play 60. And I think Copley, a lot of people don't realize, like last year was like the most games he's played in his career. Yeah. And like, he still needs to see a lot of pucks. Like, having him sit for 2 weeks straight isn't going to do anything for him to progress as a goalie or do any of those types of things, to where like they both need to have that split for different reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, I would like to see Copley get Arizona and maybe Talbot get Vegas. I mean, I want to see a split, but I would say Talbot's maybe performed just a little bit better. I don't think there's been separation. I'll just say that. But I 100% agree with you. Yeah, 100% agree with both of you guys. I mean, these goalies, the Kings aren't going to win games 3-2. We've talked about this. This isn't Daryl Sutter era. They're going to score like 4 or 5 goals a game. So you don't need that excellent goaltending. You just need average goaltending, and this is pretty much what both tenders have shown so far. And Cam Talbot hasn't played 50-plus games since 2018.
So he ain't going to do it now.
Yeah, he's not going to do it now. So this is, I would – like Joe said, if we're not getting – if we're seeing like – or if we're not getting like a Cal Peterson situation where just he can't make a save, I would be totally fine if they got 41 and 41 or even maybe like 35 and 35 and sprinkle some David Riddick in there. Like, I'd be totally fine with that because offense is going to carry – that could be goaltending.
Yeah, shut up for the rain the other night. It's just going to be interesting how this goes right now. Let me ask a quick question here. I'm not a goalie whisperer, and I don't really know much about it, Joe, and maybe or Russell, you guys, either one can take this one. How do their styles differ? And is there like a goalie that you would go with versus like more of like a down low team or a team that likes to run and gun? Is there like a style difference to where that you would play a matchup style thing in this rotation, or are they pretty similar?
I mean, I've said before, I really, when it comes to the technical side of goaltending, I don't feel comfortable talking much about it. So I would say to me, they are similar. And I think it's intentional that they've got two guys that are probably not necessarily known as like athletic goalies. They're much more kind of just positionally sound. And that's because of the style that they play in limiting high danger chances. They don't need somebody that needs to make, you know, the big time save or the flashy save because, you know, of the way that the Kings play as a style. It's a good question, Randon. I don't have a good enough answer for you other than that.
They don't need that goalie to make the big time save because there's not those high danger chances coming toward them right now. Right. So, I mean, this is what the Kings know that the goaltending situation they have. And it certainly feels like they're kind of defending in that kind of way where, hey, we're just going to collapse the middle of the ice in the slot. You're going to beat us from up high or deflections in front. And that's kind of what we've seen, right? We've seen a little bit of that. Boston was taking point shots left and right. And I think I listened to some of the Boston broadcasts afterwards, and Jack Edwards was talking about how maybe Cam Talbot wasn't the best from the point, and you just see those point shots coming left and right. So the Kings are going to give up those chances, but they're not going to give up those chances in tight. So if they can continue that, I think we'll see a good Cam Talbot and a good Phoenix Copley.
And I think we've seen, I think it happened last game too. It's been, if you're going to give up those shots from the point, which is where you want those shots coming from, you have to do a better job coverage-wise down low. And we've seen it. There's been some culprits. I mean, Doughty missed assignments. Matt Roy's missed assignments. Gavrikov's Cosby. Like, it's some of their top guys that have missed assignments on rebound goals. So, you know, that has to get shored up. But I think that's something that will correct itself. I think they'll be fine. But, like, you know, I think that each goalie has probably had a goal – maybe if it wasn't a weak goal, maybe there's some of them like, you know, that's where if you had that, I don't know, pick your ace goalie that maybe steals one of those for you, one of those shots or goals or rebounds or something that you wouldn't expect. But, you know, the idea is give up the low danger point shot, clear the front of the net, clear the rebound. And that, you know, that hasn't happened as much as it should. I mean, that's individual assignments being missed. There's been some rebound goals, but that's I don't put that on the goalies.
CJ coming in here quickie with his 59th shutout, most shutouts by a U.S. born goalie. Congratulations, Jonathan Quick.
Boy, oh boy, that's rock bottom in Edmonton right now.
Which prompts Shakemaster to come in as, should we make the trade for Quick? We said they're going to trade for a goalie at the deadline.
No.
Oh man, well. It's been excellent episode back with you guys. Glad to get back here and fire off some Kings hockey. You guys can check out all of our articles at hockeyroyalty.com. They're coming out daily with you know, post games, different analysis there. So go check that out. You could follow us at @hockey_royalty, at @RandoCommando24, at @JWPaterino, at @NHLRussell. All your rain news can be coming from Kyle there at Kopitar4HOF. If you guys want to throw down some money, some coins, some shekels, DraftKings code THPN coming at you hot. Bet $5, get $200 in bonus bets. And as always, on this podcast, go Kings, go.